This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Cownan in Washington. Has the buildup of American troops in Iraq changed the military situation there? How and where? If it's improved, why does terrible violence persist? And if the purpose of the so-called surge is to give Iraq's politicians breathing space to make difficult choices, why is there so little progress on reconciliation? Do the risks of U.S. withdrawal outweigh the dead, the wounded, the scarred, and the terrible expense of the war? Next week, Congress will put those questions and many more to the U.S. commander in Iraq, General David Petraeus, and to the U.S. ambassador in Baghdad, Ryan Crocker. Their testimony is believed to be critical as the White House and Congress debate the way ahead. Today, we'll anticipate that discussion and talk with two close students of the conflict. Later in the program, questions and answers about pediatric bipolar disorder. We'll talk with the main author of a study that found the number of kids treated for bipolar increased 40 times over 10 years. But first, the debate on Iraq. What question would you ask if you were on one of those congressional committees next week? Our number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Our guests are retired General Jack Keane, former Vice Chief of Staff of the Army. He served on the Iraq Study Group's panel of military advisors and is among the architects of President Bush's troop buildup plan in Iraq. He's with us here in Studio 3A. And General, nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Yeah, it's great to be back, Neil.
Anthony Cordesman is a military analyst and Iraq expert at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, a think tank here in Washington. He's been covering Iraq for over 30 years and visited the country many times. He's been a prominent critic of the administration's handling of the situation there. He joins us from a studio at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Nice to have you on the program today, Mr. Cordesman.
A pleasure. Thank you.
And General Keane, let's start with you. I know you're not that long back from another visit to Iraq, but if you were on one of those congressional committees next week, what questions would you have for General Petraeus and for Ambassador Crocker?
Well, I think certainly for General Petraeus, the major question is, where are we on the security situation? Have we been able to make progress, given the fact we've committed 30,000 more troops to the situation? And then for Ambassador Crocker, I mean, economically and politically, has the increased security been able to provide some growth and development in those two areas of economic assistance for the Iraqi people, and also some political progress toward reconciliation?
Anthony Cordesman, what questions might you suggest if you were on one of those committees next week?
Well, I think that my questions would be very similar to General Keane's, but I would add some that don't get enough attention. I think when you look at the issue of political conciliation, we as Americans focus far too much on the central government and a political process which may or may not succeed. The real question often is, what is happening in terms of ethnic and sectarian cleansing? To what extent has the country actually divided during the course of the period we've had the surge? And if you look at it, what you see is we've had progress in Anbar, but not Anbar in the sense of loyalty to the central government. We've ended up with four provinces in the southeast effectively becoming the scene of feuding between local Shiite elements, in two more provinces where we can't even put a PRT into the province.
Provincial reconstruction team.
That's right. And if you can't give money away, you have a problem. I think the other critical issue here, perhaps more than anything else, is what are the measures aside from violence? And General Petraeus, if we still have ongoing sectarian cleansing in Baghdad, if we can't get loyal Iraqi army units, national police, and police units that are going to prevent sectarian cleansing, where are we going in terms of security?
General Keane, I know that those are questions that you've looked into as well in your time in Iraq.
Yes, very much so. Look, I believe strongly, having been there on three different visits for about 2 weeks each for the last 6-7 months, and the last visit in August for a couple of weeks, and spent lots of time, less time in briefings and more time, you know, out on the street where the Iraqis are. And I think there's been when I took the snapshots each one of those three visits, there's been a rather dramatic turnaround particularly when you compare it to the prism of 06, when Baghdad was literally on fire and thousands of people were being killed on a monthly basis. And now you see the trends are all moving in the right direction in terms of security, and I don't want to go down through the listing of all of them, but sectarian, religious and ethnic killings are down about 75%. The car bombs certainly are decreasing. There's been a drop of U.S. casualties in the last couple of months, and weapons cache seizures, which is an important statistic because you cannot find those unless you get help, have doubled just in the January to August time frame.
When you say you can't find them without help, you need tips from the local population.
The local population. And that's why it's an important measurement. Not only are you taking weapons away from these people, but it's an indication of the shift in loyalty. But I think, and Tony hit on some of this, the most significant change that I see, and it's probably the most dramatic thing that has taken place since the invasion of 03, is the Sunni conversion, the revolt of the tribal leaders against extremism that's taken place in Iraq. And you cannot think of these tribal leaders as guys out on the desert someplace remotely disengaged from the fabric of Iraqi society. They're a very much a part of the fabric of Iraqi society, where 85% of the people belong to some tribe and have real allegiance to it. The fact is that this is now affecting close to 40% of the area in Iraq. It's in Anbar, and it's moving so fast, we're challenged to keep up with it. It's in Nineveh province, it's in Babil, it's in Diyala province, and it's also in Saladin. And interesting enough, it is having some intriguing aspects of the Shia militia also doing some of the same. Not as large a movement, but nonetheless, it's beginning to happen.
And let me just go to Anthony Cordesman, because this question of progress in Anbar province in particular, that vast desert stretch west of Baghdad on to the Syrian and Jordanian border, that was, of course, decided yesterday by President Bush as he arrived there for a brief visit with U.S. troops.
Well, I think you have to keep this in careful perspective. Anbar is a very large area. It has about 8% at most of Iraq's population. And at least under Saddam Hussein, it was responsible for about 4 to 5% of the economy. We're talking about parts of one tribal confederation that's risen up against what were very real atrocities and abuses by Al-Qaeda. But it has no reason, at least as yet, to be loyal to the central government. It's working with the United States and U.S. forces. And fortunately, there are better Iraqi army and police units in Anbar than there are in much of the rest of the country. But the progress with two other tribal confederations is very limited. And to move forward, we come back to a point General Petraeus has raised again and again, as has Ambassador Crocker. You need real political conciliation. You need to really resolve the power relationships between Sunni, Shiite, and Kurd. And frankly, what we've seen over the last 6 to 7 months is a Maliki government that can make sort of legislative progress in drafting things, but lose 40% of the cabinet members, lose control over most of the southern part of the country, and which is not reaching out with any effectiveness, at least as yet, to the people and the tribes in Anbar. President Bush can drag him out there, and so can Ambassador Crocker, I think, for all of 2 visits. But that doesn't make his office move toward conciliation.
Let's get some listeners involved in this conversation, though. General Keane, you wanted to come back on that?
Well, the fact is the Maliki government deserves some credit for recognizing, you know, this so-called revolt among the tribal leaders and the Sunni conversion, moving away from fighting us to supporting us. In Anbar province, in Ramadi alone, they have $107 million from the central government in Iraq to help with construction contracts. There are now 18,000 former insurgents, some of whom I spoke to and some of their leaders there just a few weeks ago, who are now on the payroll of the Iraqi government. That is a huge step for them. The same thing is happening in Bakuba province. Just 2 weeks ago, the central government provided to Bakuba to which is in Diyala province, I was mistaken,
mm-hmm.
they brought in $38 million right out of the central bank, long convoy, to start paying some of the people up there who are working with the provincial government. Maliki and his government, in fairness to them, despite some of the problems they have at the national level, are recognizing how important this movement is at the local level. And though it be Sunni, and though they have reasons to be concerned about Sunni long-term objectives, they also recognize that this is a positive step. The Sunnis are not asking for a separate militia. They are joining the Iraqi police. They are joining the Iraqi security forces and being integrated into those security forces. So while there's a long way to go here, none of us, I think, could ever anticipated 6 to 8 months ago this fundamental shift where the Sunni insurgency represented the largest enemy that we were fighting in Iraq. And that enemy is transforming before our very eyes.
We just have a few seconds before we have to go to a break, so we'll take calls after we come back. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. We're talking with retired General Jack Keane and with Anthony Cordesman, a military analyst at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, about the debate over Iraq and the effectiveness of the surge, questions that will come up when General David Petraeus, the U.S. commander in Iraq, and Ambassador Ryan Crocker, the U.S. State Department's man in Baghdad, returned to Washington, D.C. and testified before congressional committees. And the White House issues a report, as it's required to do by law, on progress that the Iraqi government has made towards reconciliation in Iraq. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment, so stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Coming up, your questions about the dramatic jump in the diagnosis of bipolar disorder in children. We'll get answers for you from one of the authors of a new study. And right now, we're talking about the dispute over Iraq. Our guests are General Jack Keane, former Vice Chief of Staff of the Army on the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He was one of the architects of President Bush's troop buildup plan in Iraq. He recently returned from a two-week visit there. Also with us, Anthony Cordesman, a military analyst at the Center for Strategic and International Studies here in Washington, who's been there many times. We want to know what question you would ask the top commander in Iraq or the U.S. ambassador in Baghdad if you were on one of those congressional committees next week. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And let's see if we can start with Sam. And Sam's with us from Beaufort in North Carolina.
Hi. The general mentioned that the last few visits he saw that things were getting better in Baghdad. And just as a gadfly, I'm not saying things are easy, but what if that was a result of more and more efficient cleansing of Sunnis out of Baghdad? And what if the progress in terms of things getting quieter was just an indication that the armies, that the factions are getting comfortable where they are, and that if when the U.S. leaves, there will be an all-out kind of breakout of war? And I guess my ultimate question is do we need to be honest and see what we should do towards, if that's true, towards moving towards a federated Iraq and giving up the fantasy of integration, or is there something we could do aside from that?
Mm-hmm. General Keane, I guess those are mostly to you.
Well, Sam, thanks for the question. The federated Iraq, most of the Iraqis on any side of the aisle that you talk to, among the three major groups, with the exception of the Kurds, certainly where the contention is between the Sunnis and the Shias, do not see that. Now, there is a thought that the Shias' form of government is different from the Sunnis in the sense that they would see a weaker central government with stronger power in the provinces, as contrasted with a stronger government when Sunnis were in power, as a matter of political ideology, not so much tied to Saddam Hussein, but the way the Sunnis look at power as a whole. But I think most people do not want to move towards a federation. They don't mind the provinces having more power and authority, but not a federated Iraq. In terms of the military operation in Baghdad, you have to remember that the operation in Baghdad was the main effort, but there was also a very significant supporting operation in all, use an American term, all the suburbs around Baghdad, because that is where the al-Qaeda were, and from those bases around Baghdad, they were conducting operations inside of it. very much of the al-Qaeda presence has been driven away from those areas based on the operations that have been conducted in the last few months. And the security in Baghdad, there was definitely cleansing from the Shia militia of Sunnis in some of those neighborhoods. I saw that in some neighborhoods. It's very dramatic in forcing Sunnis to move out of those neighborhoods. But nonetheless, that there is still potential for huge violence there, and it was only when the people were being protected did that stop.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, despite some of the horrific bombings that the al-Qaeda have inflicted, almost exclusively, certainly on the Shia population, the Shia militia have not responded in kind the way they did in 06, which provoked the bloodbath that we saw in Baghdad. Two reasons for that. One is we are protecting the Sunni population, and they have to come through us and the Iraqis to do it. That was not the case in 06. And the second problem with that deals with the al-Qaeda itself and some of the challenges that they have with them. So overall, the security situation has definitely improved in Baghdad for the simple reason that troops are protecting the population, and therefore attitudes and behaviors change. Secondly, the al-Qaeda has been driven out, not entirely, but mostly out of the suburbs surrounding Baghdad.
I wonder, Anthony Cordesman, if you wanted to follow up on that, and particularly on the point of ethnic strife.
Well, there are two points I'd raise, really. One is, I don't know where General Keane got the impression there were meaningful polls on Federation, but the polls are very ambiguous, and they produce very different reactions. The most authoritative polling, which has been done by ABC, BBC, when you break it down, produces very different results from the ones he described. I do think in Baghdad you see the benefit of surging U.S. troops in. It is not clear that we've been able to halt the process of sectarian cleansing. When you go there, you see a map of divided city broken up into categories which are almost exclusively Sunni, Shiite, and then selective small mixed neighborhoods. In some of the most critical areas of Baghdad, particularly the northwest, you see that the U.S. commander on the ground has to have a wiring diagram down to the captain level because he can't trust the Iraqi army, he can't trust the national police, and he can't trust the police because they're quietly involved in supporting the Mahdi militia and others in sectarian cleansing. So to some extent what you've seen is we're stopping the worst violence. The Shiite militias have no incentive to be as violent as they've been in the past, and they basically are slowly taking control of the city.
When you say wiring diagram, Anthony Cordesman, do you mean that the U.S. commander can't just go to his counterpart and presume that the instructions will go smoothly down the line? He has to know who the sub-commanders are?
I think that it's a matter of not only knowing who the sub-commanders are, but you have some Iraqi units which are really outstanding in the army. You have quite a number which have very mixed loyalties or uncertain performance. The police is not a national police. It's already broken up into sectarian or ethnic divisions virtually everywhere. And frankly, no one that I saw in Baghdad, particularly the people who had to work with the national police, trusted even the reorganized and reuniformed units because of their ties to sectarian cleansing.
Let's get another caller in. This is Sam. Sam's with us from Beacon Ridge in California.
Okay. My basic comment here is that those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And in this situation with Iraq, I find it very hard to believe that those that are in power now, with all the education that they have, seem to think that they're going to change the philosophy, the ideology, and the religion of the people of Iraq when history shows us that Yugoslavia didn't work after World War II. When the Russians pulled out, it all fell apart again. Look at Israel. It's another occupied country. It's violence all the time.
And
the only way to stop this kind of thing is to do what the Europeans did to the American Indians in the United States. You have to round them all up and put them on reservations and then completely control the country. You can never leave unless you pull out and let them settle it themselves.
So, Sam, you're saying it's—if I'm trying to divine a question out of that—is it time to pull out now?
Well, it was time to pull out a while back.
All right,
what
but
I want to know is
we can't do that.
How he believes General Petraeus, George Bush, all these highly educated people in power that should have learned from history, how do they believe they're going to make a difference now in this country?
Okay.
It has never worked before.
All right. Thanks very much. We'll see if we get an answer first from Anthony Cordesman.
I think all of this really hinges around getting serious political conciliation. And quite aside from the Maliki government, and here I have to again disagree with General Keane, I think virtually every bit of its contact in money in Anbar and Diyala has been the direct result of months of ongoing pressure from the United States. The Prime Minister's office has initiated precisely nothing. But what is important here is this is not a country with a history of ethnic and sectarian fighting unless it was provoked, either by a dictator or from outside events. It is a country which does have a history of national unity, particularly among the Arabs. It's a country where public opinion polls do show that people want unity. So if the leaders of these factions can find ways to compromise, whether we call it federation or limited autonomy, or we break it out in terms of nationalism, there is the opportunity, but only if they can move towards conciliation, and only if they can do it before people lose faith in a central government which frankly doesn't serve most Iraqis in any particularly constructive way.
General Keane, the central Iraqi government, has it won the affections of the people in Anbar province, do you think?
I think the people in Anbar province, you know, have a basic distrust of the Shia-dominated government and will continue to have. I mean, certainly they're encouraged by the three visits that Maliki has made. They're encouraged by the fact he's letting them become part of the Iraqi security forces. We do not have national immunity or amnesty, but de facto it's happening in five provinces because we have somewhere enabled about 30,000 people who were fighting us are now helping us. And Maliki certainly is letting that happen. Look, at this guy is everybody's third choice, everybody's first and second choice when they were forming the government. Clearly it was not acceptable because their strength of leadership was too much and they were too threatening. But Maliki has certainly grown in the position. I am not defending Maliki. I mean, I've had questions about him from the outset. But he is the leader of Iraq. And we should give him credit when he does move in the right direction, despite all the challenges he's presenting to us. One comment on what Sam had to say is that, listen, in fairness to the administration, and the fact of the matter is, from 03... To late 06, we did have the wrong strategy in Iraq. I mean, that's true. And this administration changed the key players and also changed the strategy. And I think they deserve some credit for doing that. They recognized that the government of Iraq was about to be pushed off the cliff. And if we didn't do something to finally get security and get violence under control so you could make some political progress and some economic development, that we would have a major disaster on our hands. And so they deserve some credit for doing that, and they also deserve accountability for the three-plus years with the wrong strategy.
Right, let's get another caller in. This is Brianna. Brianna with us from Vancouver in Washington.
Hi. To go back a minute, Anthony was talking about not trusting any of the Iraqi army, and my husband is in Iraq right now, works on the joint security stations, and I get emails from him. They do not trust the army or the police, and it is very interesting to have to work with people you cannot trust. But my question for General Petraeus would be, as an army wife, my concerns are a little closer to home. How are we going to keep our soldiers from becoming exhausted, worn down emotionally and physically, and prevent things from like Abu Ghraib happening again. Our soldiers do not get enough time home. They don't even get enough time there to sleep.
Provocative question, Brianna. Anthony Cordesman, why don't we turn that to you? The tours are extending. The numbers of tours are extending.
Well, I think that one of the key issues here, and this is something that the president and the joint staff will have to decide, and I suspect are going to announce. Can we keep up these tours of duty much beyond June of next year? I really doubt it. Are we going to have a plan that is going to start reducing our presence somewhat, ease the tours, ease the pressure on military families? Well, I think that's really something that the president may well be speaking about after General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker speak. But I also want to qualify one thing. When I said there were Iraqi units that presented problems, that's certainly not all Iraqi units. I've been out there, I've talked to people in the field too. There are many American officers, many enlisted men who do have Iraqi partners who find them very effective and do trust them.
Thanks very much for the call, Brianna, and we wish you and your husband the best of luck.
Thank you.
We're talking about Iraq. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And before we let you go, I wanted to ask you both, I guess, a fundamental question, which will come up, I think, repeatedly next week when General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker appear on the Hill. Should we be patient with U.S. policies in Iraq? And if so, why? And very briefly, General Keane?
Well, I think so, because, look, we were in a disastrous situation in 06, and we were about to get the worst possible consequences of failure. That we're on the offensive now, and things are starting to turn around somewhat dramatically in the security area. And I believe the Sunni conversion and the tribal revolt offers at least the opportunity to show us a way to eventual political reconciliation. And to the fact that the government frustrates us, disappoints us, that should not in of itself trump the progress that has been made and squander the gains that also have been made. So, yes, I do think we need some patience and we need a little bit more time. I'm absolutely convinced the troops are going to be drew down in 08, certainly to the pre-surge levels that we had in 06. And then after that, certainly, if the progress continues, they'll continue to come down.
Anthony Cordesman, the same question to you. Should we be patient and why? And again, I have to ask you to be brief.
Well, Iraq is a vital strategic interest. We are responsible, or because of our mistakes, for many of its problems. I think there is hope that Iraq's leaders can find a way to work together, move toward conciliation. If they do that, many of the security problems we face today are going to disappear, as well as the need for U.S. money and U.S. troops at anything like today's level. But when I say we need to be patient, I think, frankly, the Iraqis are not going to put up with this government or with their leaders if they don't act between now and the early spring. So there is a time window here. And either they act decisively or, frankly, a priceless opportunity is going to be lost.
Gentlemen, thank you both very much, and we'll be looking forward to the testimony next week. Jack Keane, former Vice Chief of Staff of the Army and one of the people who has helped develop the idea of the troop build-up plan in Iraq. He joined us here in Studio 3A. General Keane, thanks as always.
Glad to be here.
Anthony Cordesman, a military analyst at the Center for Strategic International Studies. He joined us from studios there. And Anthony Cordesman, thanks for your time.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Coming up, questions and answers about the dramatic increase in the diagnosis of bipolar disorder in children. Let us know what questions you have about the jump in the number of cases, 40 times as many over the course of 10 years. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. We'll join you with an expert next. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.